What portions of the Bible do you read over the quickest to get to the end of that section? The whole Bible's inspired, but some things speak to you more than others. If you're like most people, you probably skim over certain things, because if you get down to it, you probably find it tedious or not very relevant to you. Perhaps you skim over genealogies. Maybe it's the dimensions of the tabernacle. Maybe it's the high priest's clothing. Although all of these have their purpose if studied, there's one I'd like to examine today, especially since we're less than 3 weeks away from Passover. This is the Old Testament sacrifices. There are five major offerings. They're found in Leviticus chapters 1 through 7. Let's look today at what each was offered for, how they apply to Jesus Christ, and how they apply to you. The name of my split sermon is Sacrifices, Jesus Christ, and You. Sacrifices, Jesus Christ, and You. So keep these things in mind for each one. There's a wealth of information and meaning for us. It's not something we should just skim through when we're reading through. Now, I do have a handout for everyone. So if I could have my people, my helpers, not my people, my helpers, please hand those out. I wish I had people. And every adult or even child, if they're taking notes or listening, can get one because there are plenty of copies. But this is a handout detailing the sacrifices. And it's from the book, The Law of the Offerings, by Andrew Jukes. Now, something like this was given to me several years ago at ABC, and then Mr. Richard Pennelly also has several sermons about this that are very good. So you may have heard this information from him before, but it's important. It's a great topic to hopefully help you in your Passover preparation. So I'll wait till everybody gets one. So if you look at the handout, it mentions the five different offerings. You can see there are instructions for each offering, and also how each one applies to Jesus Christ. The first three offerings you see, the burnt offering, the meat offering, the peace offering, these were all voluntary offerings. Each one was considered a sweet savor to God. Now, savor means smell. So these offerings smelled very good to God. Now, in humans, it's kind of interesting. I teach anatomy. Smell is the only special sense that actually connects to emotion. When we smell something, it can bring up good memories, good emotions. Maybe you smell apple pie and it makes you think of your grandma's house. But in this case, the offerings, they smelled good to God and they pleased him. So they were not given because of sin. So instead, these were given to show devotion and worship to God. Now, these first three were also offered at the altar. Now, the last two, the sin offering and the trespass offering, these were required. These were not pleasing to God. They had to be offered outside of camp, not at the altar, but outside because they both dealt with sin. So let's look and break down each offering and see how it applies to you. So the first one is the burnt offering. If you would, please turn to Leviticus chapter 1. We'll be in Leviticus 1 for most of the message, so you may want to leave a placeholder in there, because we'll go to a few other places also. We'll start with Leviticus chapter 1. The burnt offering was the most common sacrifice. Again, it did not involve sin in any way. It was a sweet savor to God. It was pleasing to him. It deals with an animal offering that's completely consumed at the altar. Now, there were three classifications of animals that could be offered. The first was of the herd, which meant a cattle, or specifically a bull. And you find that, if you want to reference it, Leviticus 1, verses 3 and 4. It mentions the bull. The second was a sheep or goat. This is found in verse 10. The third was a turtle dove or a pigeon. This is found in verse 14. So again, it's verses 3 and 4, 10 and 14. But there was a big, a medium, and a small animal. With the bull, the sheep, and the goat, the bigger ones, the offerer actually kills and then cuts up the animal. With the cheapest and smallest one, the bird, the priest kills it and does all of the work. Now, only with the biggest one, the bull, does the offerer actually kill, but it also, he would skin the animal. So with the biggest one, the offerer would do the most work. They do a little bit less with the sheep or goat, and then even less work with the bird. Now, why were different animals and different amounts of work given? There were some who could not afford anything more than a turtle dove or a pigeon. The more that someone could afford, the more that was required of them. This parallels us. There are different levels of comprehension among members. Not everyone understands spiritual matters the same way even today. Now, we have a discernment with God's Spirit, but there should be a difference between someone who just gets baptized and someone who's been in the church for several years. To whom much is given, much is required. We have to, metaphorically speaking, we have to move up spiritually from only giving this pigeon or turtle dove to then later giving a sheep and then later on being able to give a bull. Our spiritual knowledge, our understanding needs to deepen. So should the work that we're doing as we mature. But we also have to remember, all three animals were perfectly acceptable. No matter our maturity, as long as we're learning and progressing, we are acceptable to God. Now, why were these specific animals chosen that were used in the burnt offerings? We mentioned that they represent higher grades of maturity. They also represent different aspects of Jesus Christ's character. A bull is strong, it's steady, it's untiring, it's faithful. What's a sheep do? A lot of times it submits very easily. A goat is quite a leader. Turtle dove and pigeons, they symbolize innocence. Now, Christ had all of these qualities. We know he was perfect in all ways. But let's look at a few other thoughts about the burnt offering. Leviticus 1 verse 3. Leviticus 1 verse 3 says, "If his offering is a burnt sacrifice of the herd, let him offer a male without blemish. He shall offer it of his own free will at the door of the tabernacle of meeting before the Lord." So if you notice, again, there's no sin seen here. The offering was given of someone's free will. Verse 5, "He shall kill the bull before the Lord, and the priest, Aaron's sons, shall bring the blood and sprinkle the blood all around on the altar that is by the door of the tabernacle of meeting." So the offerer takes responsibility. He kills the bull. We know that life is in the blood. This is one reason why God wants us to not eat the blood of an animal. It shows us it's God's choice to give life or take it away. Verse 6, "And he shall skin the burnt offering and cut it into its pieces." Now, why did they skin it and cut it into pieces? The offerer was looking for any blemishes found throughout the body. We know Christ was completely clean. He had no blemishes whatsoever. So this offering, this animal, cannot have any blemishes anywhere throughout it. If any blemishes were found, that animal was not used in the offering. Verse 7, "The sons of Aaron the priest shall put fire on the altar and lay the wood in order on the fire." Now, fire is mentioned here. The offering is all burned up in verse 9. What does fire do? Fire represents God's holiness. In the future, God will set the world on fire. All traces of the rebellion of Satan and humans will be burned up. Fire cleanses. But it also means approval. If you remember, when fire came down from heaven for Elijah, it was because God approved it. And lastly, fire is also used in sanctification, to set apart, to make holy. It helped to remove sin from mankind. This sacrifice was totally consumed. It was 100% destroyed, just as Jesus Christ gave 100% of himself for doing God's work. Verse 8, "Then the priest, Aaron's sons, shall lay the parts, the head, and the fat in order on the wood that is on the fire upon the altar." Now, what does the head picture? When the head was put on the altar to be burned, it represented the mind and thoughts of Jesus Christ. Now, what about the fat? Often we think of fat as being something negative, but that wasn't the case here. The fat actually represents the well-being and the health of the animal. It would help the animal through the winter. The fat in the Bible is looked at as health and vigor. In Proverbs, when it says people are fat, it means they're blessed and healthy. So the Israelites were commanded not to eat the visceral fat of animals, as well-being and health belongs to God. All good things, all blessings come from God. Verse 9, but he shall wash its entrails and its legs with fire, or sorry, with water. He shall wash, let me start again. Verse 9, but he shall wash its entrails and its legs with water, and the priest shall burn all of the altar as a burnt sacrifice, an offering made by fire, a sweet aroma to the Lord. So the guts were washed with water. This tells us God's Spirit is deeply involved with Jesus Christ. And all of the internal portions of Christ was perfect and without blame. Now, hopefully it's pretty easy to see the symbolism with Jesus Christ and the burnt offering. But what's this offering telling us that we should do? Let's turn over, again, hold your place, but let's look at Luke chapter 9. We're going to read Luke 9, verses 23 and 24. Again, Luke 9, starting in verse 23. Luke 9, verse 23 said, then he said to them all, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. Verse 24, for whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. So just as Christ gave 100%, the offering was consumed 100%. We have to finally come to love God with 100% of our heart, our mind, and our soul. This is what the first offering is all about. It's duty to God. Christ had it, and we should also. If you want to reference another verse here, this is just Galatians 2:20. I'll just read it to you. Galatians 2:20 says, I've been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. Again, that's Galatians 2:20. Think about how self-surrendering this verse is. Your comprehension must grow concerning Jesus Christ and what he's doing within you. The Passover restarts this covenant every year. It brings you to realities about your growth that you did not have the year before. So this burnt offering, it deals with loving God completely. You can also find it, Noah gave a burnt offering after the flood. Abraham did also after Isaac was spared. So again, this was the most common offering. The second one is called the meat offering. Now, the first thing to notice is the name. The King James, which is where the book takes it from, calls it the meat offering. In the 17th century, meat actually just meant food. Now today, meat means flesh, so the usage has actually changed a little bit. So if you want to write on your handout or change it, most people call this the grain offering. It's either the grain offering or the meal offering. There's actually no meat, no flesh involved with this. So we'll call it the grain offering for the rest of the message. Now, this grain offering, let's find this in Leviticus chapter 2, verse 1. Go back to Leviticus, Leviticus 2, verse 1. Leviticus 2, verse 1 says, when anyone offers a grain offering to the Lord, his offering shall be of fine flour, and he shall pour oil on it and put frankincense on it. So once again, this offering, it's a sweet savor to God. There was no sin involved here. The offerer comes as a worshiper. Now, instead of offering a life, though, like the burn offering, the grain offering is of the fruit of the ground. It's a grain or meal offering, again, because it's made primarily of flour. Now, hold your place again in Leviticus. Let's turn to a verse in Genesis chapter 1. Genesis 1, verse 29. Genesis 1 verse 29 says, "And God said, see, I have given you every herb that yields seed, which is on the face of all the earth, and every tree whose fruit yields seed. To you it shall be for food." So this verse is kind of interesting. A lot of times we'd miss this. But it tells us what portion of the earth God gave to man. He gave the earth's produce. Life is what God claims is part of his creation. He gave it. We have to respect life. Life symbolizes what you owe God. But the grain offering, this fruit of the earth, this symbolizes what you owe to man, to other people. Both of these characteristics are your duty. The burnt offering dealt with surrendering your life to God. The grain offering deals with your fulfillment of your duty to your neighbor. So these first two offerings, they're all about the first, or the two great commandments. Love God, love your neighbor. So loving your neighbor is what this grain offering is all about. So let's turn back to Leviticus 2 verse 1 and see what else we can learn about the grain offering. Now it mentions the offerings made up of fine flour, oil, and frankincense. The fine flour was actually ground to be something similar to talcum powder. So it was pounded, it was bruised until it breaks and becomes, like I said, like powder. There were no lumps, there were no inconsistencies. That's part of the character of Christ. He was and is very consistent. Now, the oil represents healing in God's Spirit, as Jesus Christ never lacked power, never lacked enough of the Holy Spirit to serve others. Now, frankincense, we don't really deal with this too much, but if thrown on fire, it causes smoke to go up. It's a sweet and very precious perfume. So when we pray, our prayers are like incense before God. We must break things down to small details in our prayer, just like the ground and beaten frankincense had to be broken down. Like I said then, it caused this huge cloud to go up. It caused this beautiful and enduring fragrance to go up. Now verse 2 mentions that some of the grain offering is burned. But let's notice the beginning of verse 3. Leviticus 2 verse 3 says, "The rest of the grain offering shall be Aaron's and his sons." Verse 10 says the same thing. Part of the offering is burnt and given to God. Again, God should always come first. But part of this offering is consumed by man. So all the offering is consumed, but partly by God and partly to man. If your body is a living sacrifice, we know Paul says it is. Do you give your body and attention to God first and then others? Notice that none is consumed by the person giving the offering. There's no room in this offering to be selfish. Again, this goes back to the two great commandments. You should be serving God. You should be serving others. Verse 11, "No grain offering which you bring to the Lord shall be made with leaven, for you shall burn no leaven nor any honey in any offering to the Lord made by fire." So notice there's no leaven found in this offering. Leaven is sour. It's corrupting. It symbolizes corrupting sin. This is why leaven could not be found here. But what about honey? Verse 11 mentions nor honey being found. Honey is very sweet naturally, but it cannot stand the test of fire like frankincense. Again, frankincense would explode into this beautiful aroma. But honey starts out very strong, but if you burn it, it ends up very weak. There's really nothing left. Unfortunately, this can also happen to us as church members. When you first get baptized, you start off very strong, but you have to be diligent to not become weaker as time passes. You're always either getting stronger or regressing. Verse 13, "In every offering of your grain offering you shall season with salt. You shall not allow the salt of the covenant of your God to be lacking from your grain offering. With all of your offerings you shall offer salt." We're told elsewhere we are the salt of the earth. So why was salt offered? It was a seasoning. It helps to retain freshness. It preserves against corruption. It represents zeal. It represents enduring. The agreement you made with God is salted, if I can say it that way. Similarly, Christ never stopped enduring. He always kept up his zeal. We also should do the same. Now, like the burnt offering, there's different grades of the grain or meal offering. This included unbaked flour, baked loaves, and then green ears. All were acceptable, but they showed different measures of understanding or comprehension of Christ and ourselves. Now, another item to mention is that Jesus Christ is our bread of life. Obviously, Christ had perfect character. But again, these two offerings, the first two, represent duty to God, which is the burnt offering, and then duty to man, which is the grain offering. God should always come first, and then others second. Now, the third one I want to mention is the sin offering. And I notice I did skip the peace offering, but I'll come back to that in the end. So we're on the sin offering. This is the first one. It's not a sweet savor to God. Now, why was a sin offering given? Maybe not for what you think. So let's read here in Leviticus 4, verse 2. So we're starting in Leviticus chapter 4, verse 2. I'll pick it up mid-verse. If a person sins unintentionally against any of the commandments of the Lord in anything which ought not to be done, and does any of them. Now, this is dealing with unintentional sin. This represents the convicted sinner coming to receive judgment. Now, judgment for what? Judgment for who we are. We know that we are all sinners. The offerer comes as a convicted sinner. He comes to represent himself as a sinner. Now, what does this mean? This sacrifice shows that God judges what we are in the sin offering. It's not a specific sin that we've done. You will not find any specific sins in this sin offering. Now, we know we're all human. We all are sinners. No human is immune to this. But Christ died for everyone, individually and collectively. We know we're all influenced by Satan. Now, if you want to jot down Proverbs 14, verse 12. Proverbs 14, 12, it just says, there's a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. So our nature is sin. We cannot escape it while being human. This sacrifice acknowledges it. Now, as mentioned earlier, this is not a sweet savor to God. God does not enjoy this offering. In fact, this offering was not burned on the altar. The altar depicted the presence of God. So this offering was actually burnt on the bare earth. They had to do it actually outside of camp. Now again, the offering does not please God, so it was offered away from him outside of camp. Now again, the offerer comes as a convicted sinner. He comes to represent himself as a sinner. Let's look at a verse in Romans chapter 7. Again, hold your place in Leviticus. Romans 7 verses, I'm going to read verses 23 to 25. Romans 7, starting in verse 23. Romans 7, verse 23 says, but I see another law in my members, warring against the law of my mind, and bringing me into captivity to the law of sin, which is in my members. So this evil nature of man is what this offering is dealing with. Verse 24, O wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death? I thank God through Jesus Christ our Lord. So then, with the mind I myself serve the law of God, but with the flesh, the law of sin. Now we know Jesus Christ did not sin. Paul is saying that because Christ lives in us now, God's Spirit gives us the ability to try to master our human nature, to try to master our sinful nature. Until we get rid of our flesh, we're going to sin. Let's turn back to Leviticus 4, continue learning about this sin offering. So back to Leviticus 4, we're going to read verse 8. Leviticus 4, verse 8 says, he shall take from it all the fat of the bull as the sin offering. the fat that covers the entrails and all the fat which is on the entrails. Let's drop down to verse 10. As it was taken from the bull of the sacrifice of the peace offering, and the priest shall burn them on the altar of the burnt offering. So part of the bull, even for this sin offering, part of the bull, the fat and the fat around its organs, was taken to be burned at the altar. Now why was that? The fat was burned there to show that the offering, even though it was a sin offering, that the sin bearer was still perfect. Now if you notice verse 3, it said the bull had to be without blemish. So the animal was perfect, and the offering itself was perfect. And Christ was perfect, but he became the sin offering. Verse 11, but the bull's hide and all its flesh, with its head and legs, its entrails and offal. Now, maybe you're not familiar with what offal is. That is how you pronounce it. The offal means the dung of the animal. So even the dung was burned. And it may take on a whole new meaning when you talk about an offal smell now. But it was all burned. Verse 12, the whole bull he shall carry outside the camp to a clean place, where the ashes are poured out, and burn it on wood with fire. Where the ashes are poured out, it shall be burned. So again, what do? They take all of the body, except for the fat, they burn it outside of the camp. Now why is that? God has nothing to do with sin. God does not allow sin to dwell with him. Let's turn over to a verse in Hebrews chapter 13 to reiterate this. Hebrews 13 verse 11. It's going to expand on this point. Hebrews 13 verse 11 says, for the bodies of those animals whose blood is brought into the sanctuary by the high priest for sin are burned outside the camp. Therefore Jesus also, that he might sanctify the people with his own blood, suffered outside the gate. So Jesus was cast outside of the city. He was sacrificed outside of the city. When he became sin for us, it was away from the tabernacle. It was away from the city of God. He was considered unfit or unworthy to be in that city when he took upon himself the sins of the world. Now the sin offering, it's not about a particular act of sin. Again, it's about getting rid of your sinful human nature. So let's, if you want to jot down 2 Corinthians 5, verse 21, have a lot of verses with this. But 2 Corinthians 5, verse 21 says, for he made him who knew no sin to be sin for us, that we might become the righteousness of God in him. Again, that's 2 Corinthians 5, verse 21. Some translations translate this to say Christ became a sin offering for us. Jesus Christ became sin for you. When all the sins of the world were laid upon him, what did Jesus say? My God, why have you forsaken me? All of the sins of the world were laid upon him at that point, and God cannot dwell with sin. Yet Christ became sin for us. He died for you as the sinner. This sacrifice pictures that. Let's look at one more verse concerning this in Job chapter 42. This is Job 42, verse 6. And this is a verse that happens at the end of Job's story. It teaches us about this nature of sin. Job 42, verse 6. Job 42, verse 6 says, therefore I abhor myself. He does not say he abhors what he did, but who he was. The New King James says the rest of the verses, I repent in dust and ashes. The Tanakh version actually better conveys the proper Hebrew. It says, seeing I am dust and ashes. Job did not abhor what he did, but who he was. Everyone can see sin and what the letter of the law is. As we continue to grow and the Spirit grows deeper in us, we realize there's a spirit of the law, which Jesus Christ showed. The Pharisees could keep the letter of the law very well. most people could keep the law of the Ten Commandments. But we cannot keep the spirit of the law without God's Spirit. As we grow, we learn more about the spirit of the law. We have to see our mistakes. So this sin offering, it sees the one standing on our behalf. But it requires the death of ourselves, so that the nature of sin will ultimately be destroyed. We are to be dead to our nature now. This is the basis of this sin offering. Number four is the trespass offering. The trespass offering. Now, this one also was not a sweet savor to God. Now, we mentioned the sin offering of Leviticus 4 covers our evil nature, the heart's sins. But the trespass offering is found in Leviticus 5 and 6. It atones for the fruits of that evil nature. Specifically, it atones for the acts that are actually performed. So let's look at a few verses concerning this. Leviticus 5, verse 15. Leviticus 5, verse 15. Leviticus 5, verse 15 says, if a person commits a trespass and sins unintentionally in regard to the holy things of the Lord. Now, it mentions an unintentional sin also. Again, it's something that's not willful, but just an error. But for this offering, this word trespass is used. But what's a trespass? Let's look at the next chapter to define it. Leviticus 6, verse 2. Leviticus 6, verse 2 says, if a person sins and commits a trespass against the Lord by lying to his neighbor about what was delivered to him for safekeeping, or about a pledge, or about a robbery, or if he is extorted from his neighbor, or if he has found what was lost and lies concerning it, and swears falsely, in any one of these things that a man may do in which he sins, then it shall be, because he has sinned and is guilty, that he shall restore what he has stolen, or the thing which he has extorted, or what was delivered to him for safekeeping, or the lost thing which he found. So what is this saying? Trespass is defined as doing wrong to God, and or doing wrong to a neighbor. We read of violently taking, deceitfully getting, swearing falsely. In each case of trespass, wrong was done. There was an act of evil, and someone else was injured. The sin offering, going back to the one before, that was about the human nature inside of us that causes us to sin. But the trespass offering was given because of the actual evil that someone had done. So the trespass offering does not deal with the sinner, but it deals with the act of wrong. If a man wronged God, that's trespass. If he wronged or robbed his neighbor, that was trespass. So let's look back at chapter 5, verse 15. Leviticus 5, verse 15. If a person commits a trespass and sins unintentionally in regard to the holy things of the Lord, then he shall bring to the Lord as his trespass offering a ram without blemish from the flocks, with your valuation in shekels of silver according to the shekel of the sanctuary as a trespass offering. So in this trespass offering, an animal's life was given. A perfect animal bore the penalty. But instead of just stopping there, there's another component to this. Verse 16, he shall make restitution for the harm that he has done in regard to the holy thing. He shall add one-fifth to it and give it to the priest. So the priest shall make atonement for him with the ram of the trespass offering, and it shall be forgiven him. So if a person wronged someone else, the priest would determine what was needed to make restitution for the harm. It's basically compensation for any damages. The priest would judge what was fair. But the judgment was not only paid in full, but an extra one-fifth was added on. For instance, if someone came and stole $1,000 from you, they'd have to pay you back $1,200 to make amends for it. So the injured party actually received more back. They actually gained when you're wronged by someone. Now what's this saying to us? With your specific sins, some are more harmful than others. We know all sin is going to lead to death, but some sin will hurt you or hurt others much more. Kidnapping someone is probably going to lead to more harm than losing your temper. Some sins can follow us for life. For instance, someone who's promiscuous, they may have to deal with sexual diseases for the rest of their life. This is what this trespass offering is showing. You will unfortunately commit sin, but you need to look at the major issues that are plaguing you and causing you to commit many sins. For example, maybe you're really bad at receiving criticism. You could focus on trying to be better at taking criticism, or you could focus on the underlying pride that's there. Again, all sin leads to death. We should strive to get rid of all sin, but certain sin causes more harm. You have to look to eliminate that, especially as we approach Passover. Now, what can we learn from this trespass offering? Your conscience must be correctly trained to let you know when you fall and when you fail. Some sins will not be easily seen. We also learned that when restitution is possible, you should make it. It can help to start the healing process. And then after you do your part to make good with someone else, you learn from the lesson, you move on. We ask God for forgiveness. We don't dwell on our trespasses, but we learn from them. Christ's death makes up for the sin or trespasses that you've committed against God and against your neighbor. The fifth one and last one is the peace offering. I wanted to end with this one. This is, again, a voluntary offering. This is a sweet savor to God. So what does that mean? No sins involved. Without sin, it means it could be offered on the altar. Let's look at this in Leviticus chapter 3. Leviticus 3, verse 5. Leviticus 3, verse 5 says, "And Aaron's son shall burn it on the altar upon the burnt sacrifice, which is on the wood that's on the fire, and as an offering made by fire, a sweet aroma to the Lord." So notice what it says here. The peace offering was burned along with the burnt offering, typically. Now, I didn't mention this earlier, but usually several of these offerings were given at the same time. For instance, often someone would give the trespass offering outside of camp. Then they'd go to the altar to give the burnt offering, then the grain offering, and then end with the peace offering. So all three of these voluntary offerings were given and offered on the same fire. Now you can read more about this offering in Leviticus 3, and it says that on your handout. There's also a couple other verses if you want to add them. Leviticus 7, verses 11 through 18, and 29 through 32. So again, you can also read about this in Leviticus 7, verses 11 through 18, and verses 29 through 32. But I'll just summarize what those say. With this one, the offerer brought his offering to the altar. He laid his hands on it. He killed it. The priest sprinkled the blood upon the altar and around it. Now the animal was cut up. God's portion, which was pretty much the fat and the kidneys and their fat. This was placed on top of the already burning, burnt, and meal offerings. Then the priest received the breast and right shoulder for himself and his children. Then the offerer received the remainder of the animals to eat. However, if you gave the offering, you had to eat it within 1 day if it was a thank offering, or within 2 days if it was a vow offering. So if any of this offering remained on the third day and you had not eaten it, you had to burn it. So in this process, the major teaching of this offering is revealed. So again, some's given to God, some's given to the priest, and some's given back to the person. Now this burning on the altar of the sweet savor offering, it pictures God consuming a meal and being satisfied. Likewise, the priest received his portion. It shows him being satisfied also. And then the offerer with his portion is also satisfied. Several words are used for this. Words like filled, or gratified, or contented, or accepted, or convinced, or supplied, or persuaded. But all of these capture the intent of the symbolism. Now in addition, since all parties, God, priest, and man, share the same meal and satisfaction, it shows it all in peaceful communion or peaceful fellowship. because it was placed in sequence on top of the other two offerings. The peace offering is directly connected to them. It shows the effect of perfect devotion to God and man. So you have a peaceful satisfaction. You have peaceful fellowship. It's the fruit of wholeheartedly keeping the two great commandments of the law. After our relationship with God is where it needs to be, pictured by the burnt offering. And then our relationship with man is where it needs to be, pictured by the grain offering. We truly can be at peace. Then we can be in one accord. This is the peace offering. If you want to jot down John 17, verse 21. John 17, verse 21 through 23, it says, "That they all may be one, as you, Father, are in me, and I in you. That they also may be one in us, that the world may believe that you sent me. And the glory which you gave me I have given them, that they may be one, just as we are one. I in them, and you in me, that they may be made perfect in one." Again, that's John 17, 21 through 23. God wants us to be one, one with him, one with our brothers and sisters. For final verse, turn over to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew 5, we'll read verses 23 through 25. Matthew 5, verse 23 through 25. Matthew 5, verse 23 says, "Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift." And this is why the individual, when eating this sacrifice, they were to eat it very quickly. It's important to make peace quickly. Being a peacemaker is very important as a Christian. Verse 25, agree with your adversary quickly while you're on the way with him. So what can we learn from this? We never should delay in making peace with God or man. Make peace quickly. This is the principle found in Matthew 5. It's a principle found in the peace offering. Loving God and loving our brothers and sisters is the ultimate goal of Jesus Christ. How are you doing in your peace offering? Is your relationship with God where it needs to be? Only you can answer that. Have you grown since last year? How's your relationship with others? Are you at peace with all others as much as you possibly can? If not, you have to try. You'll never have God's peace that he wants to give you if you carry grudges against others. You must make all efforts to have peace. This is what God expects of you. So to recap, there's five offerings found in the first seven chapters of Leviticus. The burnt offering teaches you to love God with all of your heart, soul, and mind. The grain offering teaches you to love your neighbor as yourselves. The peace offering teaches you to make peace with God, make peace with others. This should be an ongoing process. The sin offering teaches you who you are. You're a sinner. The trespass offering teaches you you must make amends for your wrongs. You must eliminate the major sins that are plaguing you. So all of these sacrifices apply to Jesus Christ, as the handout outlines. All of these sacrifices apply to you as you present your body as a living sacrifice. Are you a bull, a sheep, or a pigeon? As you go through your self-examination this year, use these sacrifices to help to better worship our great God.